IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello, and welcome back to IRS on the Road.
We're glad to be with you, as always. We always record on Friday morning, and we wake up on Friday, and we look at each other, and we say, oh, it's the radio show today. We still call it the radio show because that's what it was for so many years.
Yeah.
And now it's just a podcast and it's in its 16th season. My goodness, we were just youngsters when we started doing this.
We are glad to be back with you. We are back up at Bear Lake this week looking at the gorgeous, gorgeous clouds, blue sky, blue lake. It's gorgeous.
And we are here for a high school reunion. We're going to have a bunch of my old classmates from the class of 1962.
Whoa, that's really old.
Wow. I got to do my math and figure out.
I was not even born then.
How old these IRS really are.
It really is always fun to do this. Richard got jealous because I was doing my class reunion 24/7 for a while this summer.
Said, you were hey. Chairman, Madam Chairman.
Of- no, I had a good friend who we co-chaired. But anyway, it was really fun. And he just decided that was so much fun that he wanted to have some fun too. So we're having fun tomorrow.
Yes, we are.
And you have a co-chair too, you should say.
Yes, but we should also mention, honey, that we had quite a visit. This, and it ties into the podcast a little bit. We had a visit from our nanny from England 40 years ago.
Right.
More than 40 years ago.
Oh my goodness. It was so fun to see her again. Yeah, I mean, we've seen her just bits and pieces since then. But wow, she came to the USA with her beautiful daughter. We had so much fun with her.
And she knew everything about our family. She's like up to date on everything. She knows all of our 9 kids. Of course, she was their nanny, and so she knew them well when they were little. But she's up to date. She knows where they are, what they're doing, how many kids they have, and what each of them are doing. And we're like, Ann, how do you know all this stuff? How do you, we haven't seen you for 40 years and you're up to date on everything. And she's like, oh, I listen to IRS on the Road every week.
We said, you are kidding. You live in London. How did you do that? And she said, it's on Spotify. It's just on Spotify. So we looked on Spotify and sure enough, it's there.
Well, it's on, kind it. Of it's on all podcast apps.
In the old ages.
But we, and it is kind of fun as we travel around the world to have people come up and say, gee, you know, they know all we probably say too much on this podcast. We don't have any
secrets. You know, we do. We don't have a screen. Yeah.
So anyway, that was fun.
So thanks to Anne for visiting and her daughter, Georgia, who is a midwife now. It's just amazing how time flies. But she saved our lives so many times. She was so dear. And she actually came. We brought her over to the U.S. for a year and loved her, and she helped with the kids, and then she came back again, and it was fun to see her.
But I mean, some of you are probably listening and saying, wait, what, you had a nanny? Why did you have a nanny? Just because you lived in England, you thought you had to have Mary Poppins, or what was going on over there? But remember, we went over there to preside over the LDS mission. We had over 600 missionaries over 3 years that we were in charge of. Plus, we had the 4 little kids we brought over with us and 2 that were born there. And if anyone has ever needed a nanny, it was us.
Yeah, it was great. We had lots of young girls that helped us. But wow, it was made it so much easier. So anyway, so now she's on her way for her. She's in Las Vegas.
She's retired. She's, you know, now just having a good time. And Georgia was married. Her daughter was married in Las Vegas. So they made a stop in Las Vegas on their tour. Are they back in London now?
I think they're on their way back. And it is just always so good to have somebody drop in from the past. You probably know what that's like, but it was really a delight.
Well, and with our reunions, and we're thinking back in the 60s today, and Linda's got a little playlist. If you're gonna do anything, it's good to have a partner like Linda. She's got this playlist, and she was just before we went on the air, she was like playing, "You want me to sing it?
No.
Go away, little girl. Go away, little girl. I'm not supposed to be alone with you." We've got
What?
60s music today.
Yeah, we have about 30 songs on a playlist, which we had for my reunion. Now we're going to play again. But anyway, going on because it's an exciting day. It's gorgeous here at Bear Lake, and we hope that you're happy wherever you are.
And we're going to conclude our September month on how to live the second half of life physically. And those of you who are with us most weeks know that the first week of the month we talked about diet. Second week we talked about exercise. Third week we talked about medical care and finding the right doctors, getting the right tests. And it's the fourth week. And we're talking about the effect that places have on our physical health. Physical places impact our physical health in remarkable ways. Where you spend your time. And I know we don't always have a choice where we spend our time. We go to work, we go to the office, we go to do what we do, we live where we have to live. Yet somehow it seems, honey, that we always find special places that nourish us, that kind of renew us, that kind of replenish us. And for us, we're sitting in ours right now, or at least one of ours, and that's Bear Lake. I think when we get here to Bear Lake, my blood pressure goes down by 10 points just by being here.
You know, everyone has special places where you feel better. When I'm during deliveries toward the end, when we had people who were talking us through that, they would stand by and say, "Go to your,
Having babies, you're talking
yeah,
about?
go to your happy place." You know, during labor and delivery, go to your happy place and figure that out. It'll calm you down. And this is funny because last night we were at our house in Park City, and we have our son and daughter-in-law living there with us. We weren't actually with us because I was recovering downtown and from this knee surgery. But anyway, they have been there with their kids for about 3 weeks, and we found out where their happy place was. At least Julie, our daughter-in-law, she in fact, Richard's happy place is just running around in the mountains out there. Every time we go, he's right out there in the mountains. But their happy place is a little stream that goes down just below our house. And
Icy cold mountain
it's
stream.
a mountain stream, and they love exercise. She's had the kids out hiking every day. And after they get all sweaty, they run down there and take a cold plunge in that stream. She went down there and
I
took
said, "Where
her.
are you going, Julie?" And where are you? And our little grandson Dean is all excited. "Oh, we're going for our cold plunge."
And they did. They went down there and they came back soaking wet, and they thought it was the best thing they'd done. It was their happy place.
But I'm glad you mentioned, honey, that the places, physical places in our lives that we love and that nourish us and that kind of resonate with our souls, they are physical places, but they can also be mental places. That's what you're saying, the happy place you go to in your mind, like in the Happy Gilmore movie. He had a happy place. Wouldn't recommend his, but you can. I used to always go when I really needed to get calm, or when I was facing a writing deadline and I had writer's block or whatever. I would go over to our barn that we used to have our horses in, and I'd just sit there on a little old chair that was in the corner of the barn, and the horses would be eating their hay, and the light would be sifting through the planks of the barn, and it was just. I just, it was just a calm connection. It was just a place that really worked for me. And now, as Those of you who listen regularly know we finished horses. By the way, that's one of the things about physical health and safety is you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them, and you got to know when to quit things. And when our last horse died, Linda said, "That's it. No more horses. No more riding. We're too old. We're going to get bucked off." And I regretfully agreed. But the point is that we sold that barn, and it's gone. The barn's gone. It was knocked down just 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And at first I was sad, and then I thought, you know, I still go there in my mind. If I'm really stressed and I need to calm down, I take a few deep breaths and I go to the barn and I sit in there in my mind mentally, and I still feel it. I feel the same thing I used to when I actually went there. Isn't that
Oh,
a great
that's
thing?
great.
You can
You
transport
can
your.
do interesting things with your mind. But it is important to have places that you love. I mean, there are actual places you love to go. Of course, we love to be here at Bear Lake, but sometimes it's just your backyard, just a tree in the backyard where you can really get away from the world and
Favorite tree, a favorite walk in a neighborhood, a little park that you go to. I mean, there's something about places, and no one can say, "Oh, I live in a city. I'm in congestion all the time. I can't go anywhere," because we have friends in New York who they just go out on this little balcony. It's like a fire escape, but they have flower boxes there, and they just. It's beautiful. The point is there's beauty everywhere, and we just need to find it and treasure it and love it. I mean, Keats, you know, when we it's funny how things connect, because here we've had Anne here with us, who lived with us in London and in Surrey, where our house was in England, and that's also where Keats, the childhood home of the poet Keats, was close to where we lived, close to a beautiful, beautiful place. Speaking of places, a place called Box Hill, just a gorgeous place with old, beautiful elms and oaks and big trees that you can only get in London or around in the English countryside and pasture land and so on. And we would go there. That was one of our places. And it was Keats who said, "A thing of beauty is a joy forever." And he also said, and I'm just so intrigued with this quote. He said, "Truth is beauty, beauty, truth. That is all we know on earth and all we need to know."
wow, that blows your mind, doesn't it?
I just love that thought, that there is an inherent beauty in truth, and that truth and beauty are, in one way of thinking, the very same thing. And when you're in beauty, when you feel beauty, when you absorb beauty, you're absorbing truth in a way that we don't fully understand, but in a way that matters. And, you know, I know we all pray for our children and our grandchildren as they grow up in this really difficult and troublesome world, and what we always find ourselves praying for them, Linda and I, you can confirm or deny, honey, but we find ourselves praying for the Spirit of God, for the gift of the Holy Ghost, for a spiritual guidance to them, because we're not going to be with them all the time. They face so many difficulties. We believe in a Holy Spirit, and we want that spirit, we ask for that spirit to be with them. And that's the thing and one way to think about the spirit is we pray that our children and our grandchildren will have discernment, that they'll be able to see through all the deception that's in the world and all the artificial nonsense that's in the world, and see the good and see the real and be able to discern what is good for them and what's good for their children and what isn't, and what is true and what isn't. And really, that kind of comes down to what Keats said: truth is beauty, and untruth or deception or false ideas are ugly in a very real sense to someone who has that spirit guiding them. And so when we pray for discernment for our children, we're really praying for their ability to recognize not only truth from error, but beauty from ugliness.
Right. Right? So we're going to leave you with that thought for a moment while we take a short break, but we will be right back.
Welcome back to Iyer's on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back, talking about truth and beauty and places where we can go and feel safe and get away from the world.
And keep in mind, this is part of our September being spent on how to live the second half of life physically. And the physical places are really a major part of that. And by the way, you know, we're thinking of putting a lot of these thoughts on how to live the second half of life into a book at some point. And I had an idea for a title the other day, honey. The Octogenarian Overview.
You always have an idea. Before the book is even formulated, do you think of a title? So we'll have to talk about that.
Well, but the whole idea of, you know, and I think the subtitle ought to be, you know, how to live the octogenarian overview, how to live the second half of life, and then maybe a little subtitle that says something like, the sooner the better, because what we're really discovering as we try to explore and do this course we're doing on how to live the second half, we discover that the second half of life is better than the first half. It involves thinking about relationships more than achievements. It involves focusing on who you are and who you're becoming rather than what you're doing. There's just so many aspects to second half thinking, and we're certainly not the pioneers in this. Arthur Brooks and the Harvard study and so many other people finding that the happiest time of life, statistically, you know, on public opinion polls, really is the second half if we get it right. And so the sooner you can move into that, the better. You don't have to say, well, I'm not 40 yet, so I can't live in the second half of life. Think of the second half as the better way of thinking, the better perspective, the better awareness. And you move toward that as soon as you possibly can.
Yeah, do you miss the past?
Well, it's an interesting question because we're doing these high school reunions and so on. So I look at the past with nostalgia. Is that the same as missing it?
No, not really. I mean, we wouldn't go back for anything, right?
Well, that's the interesting question.
But would you go back with what you know now? Would you go back to the past and be a better person? Probably so. But, you know, you can't do that. You have to get the experience on the way through.
It is funny, though, that sometimes in our seminars we'll ask people, what do you think the prime of life is? You know, when are you really at your prime? And people will say, oh, I don't know, probably my 20s. I was pretty, you know, pretty buff. I was pretty fit. And some will say, no, the 30s. And some will say, I don't know, I kind of think I'm in the prime in the second half of life, maybe not physically, but mentally and emotionally. And, you know, maybe this is the prime. But then we often ask the question you just said, honey. Well, would you go back? You know, if you could roll the clock back, would you go back and be 25 again or 35? And no one would.
Well, it would be kind of fun to drop in for a week or so and be 25 again, knowing what we know now, or even high school. I mean, by the time you're 25, you know a lot more than you did when you were 15, that's for sure. Yeah. But it would be so interesting to do that. I mean, they've tried to do movies sort of about that, but really thinking about going back, you wonder why in the world you did this or that. Why did you think this or that? But Actually, it is really fascinating to think about what you would do differently if you could go back.
There's a movie right now, we haven't seen it, but our son the other night said, and that doesn't have particularly good ratings. What's it called? A Big, Bold, Beautiful Story, I think, which
Yeah.
reminds me of the big Beautiful Bill
Right. That came out an unfortunate
I think
time.
they, yeah, they
But
didn't realize the name thing. But it's a movie
it's
about going
fascinating.
back.
Yeah, we've got to see it because he loved it. The music is beautiful. The thoughts are really deep, and I love a movie like that.
But honey, it's interesting how these things tie together because we're talking about this gorgeous world. If you can see what we see now, we're looking all across this Caribbean blue lake, and we see the mountains on the west side, and the clouds are really stunning today, and it's clearly autumn here, and the grass is all turning golden and so on. And you say, well, places do really nourish us, and can we in the second half of life spend more time than maybe we have before in places we choose to be, not places where we have to be? And there's still a lot of places we have to be, and we can make them beautiful in their own way. But it to me, it you know, we call the earth Mother Earth. There's something really sort of more than metaphoric about that. The earth really is, it nourishes us on so many
It is
levels.
our mother, really is.
It really is our mother, and the certain parts of it that nourishes most, we should be so grateful. We should, we take the earth for granted. And when we see stark beauty, like if our son is right, who lives in Switzerland, is at a conference right now, and he sent a picture last night. Did you see it, honey? Of looking
No.
out his window, and he's looking right at the Matterhorn,
It's Zermatt and Zermatt, yeah.
Zermatt. And there, excuse me, there are places that are strikingly beautiful, but so much of the earth is beautiful in small and beautiful detail, and to absorb that and to take that in and to live with it and to appreciate it is part of how to live physically. It really is.
So, can you think of a favorite place that you had when you were a child?
Yeah, I did. We had a park called the Adams Park that was right across the street, kitty corner from our house, and it had two enormous, they're still there. They're weeping willow trees. They're huge. And I used to go over there and just walk around when I needed solitude. I'm not saying as a child, but as a teenager, and especially in my early 20s, before I had you, before I'd found you to straighten me out and complete my
You
life.
were a wild child.
Well, I remember
No.
one time when I'd run for student body president at Utah State, where I was going to undergraduate school, and I, for whatever reason, I thought I was a shoo-in. I thought I was going to win, and a guy beat me. I lost in the election, and I remember walking over in that Adams Park and walking around thinking, oh man, I'm a failure. What am I going to do? And I it was just a place I would go. I went over there when my father died and walked around. I remember one whole day. And we all need places like that.
Yeah, I have a beautiful place that I loved. We had a little horse named Foxy.
Yeah.
And my sister and I, more than anything, is the best Christmas present we ever got. We just didn't have money
Well,
when we
you
were
got
growing up,
Foxy
little
for
kids.
Christmas? I
Yeah,
forgot that.
we were sitting there. We had a few little presents on Christmas morning. And then my mom said, "Well, your dad's got one more present for you." And we saw him coming in with the truck pulling a horse trailer. And there was a horse in it. We had begged for a horse. He grew up with horses. So did my mom. I mean, the horses were part of the family for them. They knew how to, saddle them and make them pull grain and all this stuff. But anyway, We had never had a horse, and so we were so excited.
Was
we were
that
beside
experience that you'd
ourselves.
go out with Foxy and you'd get
So
you'd
yeah, at
feel
the
the
farm, I get we my dad would saddle him up for us, and we'd go down sometimes it went down bareback. But I was on a saddle this one night, and there we had a field that connected to another field, and a little pile of dirt on top, right in the middle. Somebody just dug a hole and left a pile there. I don't know, but I went up on that pile, and that was just my happy place. I just loved looking around from the top of that pile. And
sure glad we're doing ours on the road so I can learn stuff about
you. But I've never thought of I do think about it once in a while, but I've never thought about that being my happy place. I love to go down there. One night I did go down bareback on this horse. And you know, when you know a little bit about horses, you know that when they go and they're going away from food and away from the barn, they don't want to go very much. But once they turn around and they know they're headed back for the barn, they shoot out of there. And this horse just shot out of there, and I wasn't expecting it, which I should have been. And honestly, I started falling over. It was going really fast on a gallop, and I started falling over, was hanging onto the mane, and then that sweet horse just stopped. I could tell that I
you can tell you were stressed.
I couldn't handle it. So you know, those are memories that, I mean, think about your memories of a childhood as a child, and it's amazing that sometimes you haven't even thought about it for a long time. I hadn't thought about that for years.
And thinking of places and how they nourish us, you know, until a couple of generations ago, most people on the planet Earth never went more than 100 miles from where they were born. That's what's so interesting to think about.
That's right.
And we live in a world now where more than ever, right now in 2025, the world is more accessible than it's ever been. People say, oh, travel's so expensive. You know, air travel is cheaper in real dollars than it's ever, ever been. When we were in Boston as graduate students a long time ago, 50 years ago, we would look for round trip tickets back to Utah that were under $500. And if we could get one, we'd get it. Now we can fly to Boston on a round trip for $300 if we get a budget airline. And it's even more so in Europe. I mean, our kids that live in Europe can fly all over Europe for basically nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't know that we're advocating more and more travel, but we've always felt that the more parts of the earth you can, I mean, this is an overstatement, but the more parts of the earth you can see, the more perspective you have. Not just traveling as a tourist, but trying to spend a little time in places. And in our case, as many of you know, we'd go live in Mexico for a summer. We were riding, and we could ride as well there as somewhere else, or a summer in doing humanitarian service in Bulgaria, or doing humanitarian work in Peru or whatever, and just seeing the world. And our speaking and so on has taken us to 100 different countries. And that's unrealistic for most people.
Yeah,
but travel, remember our kids used to always want to come with us, and we'd say, well, you got school. And they'd say, well, you told us to never let school interfere with our education. And the education is when we travel. That's when we really learn stuff.
I hope there are no school principals listening to this today. But I do have to say that I feel so close to those people that I see on TV. We have been to Gaza. We have been to Israel. We have been to Sudan. We have been. And when I love those people. We spend a lot of time in the Middle East. And when I see those poor people, you know, just dying, their children dying, they're dying.
We're Ukraine. Where
and
we have,
the medical care is horrible. And I just like to watch the BBC because they just give you a straight answer on what's going on, but they let you know what's going on in the world. And because we've traveled so much, I just feel such a closeness. These people are our brothers and sisters. It just really is moving.
Well, I heard a guy once say that the two things he wanted to strive for as his life went on was more awareness and more perspective. And I would say, just kind of in closing today, that those are the two guaranteed things from purposeful travel, when you have the opportunity and when you can, gaining more perspective and gaining more awareness. And And with it comes this connection to the whole earth, which I think is part of how to live the second half physically.
Yeah, I do too. Well, it's been a nice chat today. We hope that we gave you some things to think about in your own life, your own places.
And join us next week because we're going to begin the month of October talking about how to live the second half of life mentally. And we have a lot to say on that.
It'll be fun. Join us next time on Ayers on the Road. See you then. Bye-bye.